Welcome to this Frequency Matters podcast. I'm Pat Hindle, and today I'm talking with Randy Becker, application engineer at Keysight Technologies. Welcome, Randy.
Hey, thanks, Pat. Good to be here.
So Keysight is at the forefront of 5G and now 6G technology as a leading test and measurement company. So today I wanted to see if we could cover 5G millimeter wave market and some of the challenges that it still faces. You've done a lot of videos for us, so I know you have a lot of expertise in this area. So let's start off with the first high-level look at what's happening in the 5G new radio market overall.
Right. So there's a couple of interesting things happening. And kind of the first statistic, you can find lots of statistics, right? But there's going to be over 70 different billion things connected by 2025, right? And that's just a crazy number of connected things, you know, people to people, people to machines, machines to machines. And we think about that, the population on planet Earth today is just somewhere right around just under 8 billion. And so there's just going to be more and more things connected. In fact, an example of that, I just bought a new gas range this year and it has Wi-Fi capability. So people are going to come up with new applications for doing different things. And, you know, by 2030, we'll have over 11,000 small satellites launched. And this is all kind of pointing towards the trend of more data, more bandwidth, that is only going to increase over time. And if we looked, you know, there's a couple of interesting applications for that, you know, and I'll just like mention a couple of them here. So the first one, I think, is one that's becoming more, you know, getting a lot of interest is the autonomous kind of self-driving car. And if we think about that, there's a lot of communications that have to happen with that, you know, in terms of safety and cars being aware of other cars and that are either being driven or self-driven. And then kind of the entertainment aspects of that, the people in the car still want to be connected and maybe doing different things. Another one is new advancements in aviation. I'm actually a pilot, and so I kind of follow that industry a little bit. And there's a company in Southern California that just announced a new vertical takeoff and landing aircraft that will carry a couple of people. And the idea is to give them new experiences, maybe take them out of a dense urban environment out to, you know, maybe their favorite park or out to the coast or to the edge of a mountain, something maybe they wouldn't have done, you know, maybe only done on the weekend, and now they can do it after work or maybe during lunch. And again, you have those same kind of things coming to mind. You're trying to navigate something in three-dimensional space. It has to be aware of other manned and unmanned aircraft. And then, you know, the passengers want to still be able to share that experience with their friends and family. So there's an entertainment aspect of that communication as well. And you could also imagine with the kind of the vertical takeoff and landing part of that, you're now getting into off airport landings where you're going to be landing maybe where there's other people, other cars. And so there's just a lot of the need for communication and coordination of that stuff is just going to increase. So those are two kind of interesting applications driving that. We're also seeing, you know, kind of get outside of 5G a little bit in kind of the satellite world. I guess also related to 5G, we're seeing satellites being used for the 5G backbone for non-terrestrial networks. And some of these are moving from RF frequencies into microwave and even optical frequencies. And then kind of thinking a little bit more towards 5G again, you know, the 5G runway, very long. We're just really starting to get that rolled out now. And there's a lot of new enhancements coming with, you know, release 16, 17, 18, privatization of networks, the government and military applications of 5G. So those are some of the, you know, kind of the applications. And then if we think about some clear trends there that I see in the industry, so there's more data being consumed. And what is this driving? Well, it's driving the need to go to wider bandwidths. And where are we going to get the wider bandwidths? Well, that's at the higher frequencies, right? Sub 6 gigahertz, where all of the current cellular is deployed, is very crowded. It's getting full. And so to get that wider bandwidth, we've got to move to millimeter wave. And even in 5G, We have bands defined up in what we call FR2 at 28 and 39 gigahertz being popular. But in release 17, we're going to move up into the 70 gigahertz region. So that's a clear trend. And a second clear trend is the disaggregated radio. So traditionally, we have, you know, a base station with sort of all of the components there. And now we're trying to take and split that apart into multiple subcomponents that we would call an RU or radio unit, DU distributed unit, and the CU or centralized unit. And the idea here is really to allow operators to mix and match the absolute best components available in the industry to meet their particular requirements.
Yeah, Open RAN is a big trend these days, and you see like it's catching on with a lot of people now.
Absolutely. Yep. There's definitely a lot of, and we're seeing a lot of, you know, new players into the base station market that you haven't seen before. There's a lot of companies that have really great RF expertise, but, you know, maybe weren't in the base station market. And then there's a whole host of companies in the digital domain that have, you know, great expertise in the digital domain and maybe doing baseband processing. A lot of this, a lot of the functions of the base station are being virtualized. And so this just plays into their expertise there.
Yeah. You mentioned the quadcopter car. I can't wait for that. We have a place in Boston here that's trying to commercialize one of those. So can't wait for that to happen.
It's going to happen. Yep. I'm convinced it's going to happen. You know, they're working very closely with the FAA because there's a lot of uncharted territory, but you know, they're kind of paving the way for some of these new applications, definitely.
So you mentioned all these various market drivers and challenges. How is that impacting millimeter wave applications?
I would say, you know, moving to millimeter wave has several things that we have to think about. And, you know, the first one is just the losses at millimeter wave are so much greater than they are at sub 6 gigahertz. So the losses through the components, you know, in the device itself, in the circuits are higher. And then the over the air losses are obviously higher. And so this is making the signal levels that we have to work with much smaller. And so your signal to noise ratio is going down. And, you know, everybody wants to have that same kind of performance they're used to in sub 6 gigahertz. They want to kind of see, you know, that sub 1% kind of EVM level that we're used to, you know, easily doing now in sub 6 gigahertz, but we want to have that same kind of performance up in millimeter wave. The lower signal to noise ratios are making that harder. Another thing that's making that harder is, you know, we're moving to the wider bandwidths. And so if we take a fixed amount of power and we spread that over a wider bandwidth, your power spectral density is going to be lower. And so that's also making signal to noise ratio lower. And then another technique that people are trying to exploit to get the throughput higher is higher order modulation. So, you know, we're moving into, you know, the thousands of QAM to increase the efficiency. But these higher order modulation formats have the downside of having higher peak to average ratios. And so this leads to, you know, whole another set of things to worry about, right? So you can back off, you know, how hard you're driving an amplifier to avoid clipping those peaks. Or in some cases, people are saying, no, I'm going to use some clever techniques and do some kind of crest factor reduction. But then you're going to end up with, you know, EVM issues and ACLR issues. And this gets into the domain of the digital pre-distortion. So now that we've sort of artificially clipped those peaks and introduced some issues, now we're going to introduce some additional techniques to kind of counteract that. So all of this is just really pointing to, you know, the signal to noise ratio is so much more important at millimeter wave.
So are those challenges the reason millimeter wave has not been largely deployed, or are there other issues?
I would say there's multiple reasons millimeter wave is not largely deployed yet, but we're quickly getting there. So the first, I think, reason is, you know, all the operators have sub 6 gigahertz spectrum, and that's quickly being used up, and they're going to have to move to FR2. But they're not going to move there until they absolutely need to, right? So It's when they've run out of that spectrum, then they're going to move. And every operator has different needs, right? Their networks are all different and probably different in all of the, you know, different geographies that they serve. And so that's one reason. I think another reason is that millimeter wave is just harder to do. We kind of talked about, you know, the signal to noise ratio aspect of it, making it harder, but it's just harder to do. It's not necessarily, you know, millimeter waves aren't new, but the application of it to cellular communications is new. And so we have all these different building blocks that we're trying to put together and make them work well, right? So we have phased array antennas and multiple phased array antennas that might be in a mobile handset and in the base station. And we have to do beam forming and beam tracking. We also have battery issues to worry about in the mobile handset. And, you know, how and when would you use the millimeter wave, and for how long and for what kinds of applications, right, would you want to engage that radio? So I think the industry is still trying to figure out how to optimize the use of millimeter wave, but we're definitely heading there, and the infrastructure is being built for that. I mean, today you can buy mobile handsets with millimeter wave radios in them. There's not a lot of them, but we're starting to get them, and eventually it's going to be more commonplace. So we're just at the early stage of this, I guess is what I'm trying to say.
So how are we making measurements to, you know, better improve in these areas? You know, what are the limitations and how are we progressing there?
You know, if we think back a couple of years ago when we were, you know, when 5G was new and we were moving into the millimeter wave space, the ability to measure and quantify some of those things was more difficult, right? And we had ways to do it, very flexible instruments, but maybe a single instrument didn't contain all of the functionality needed to make that measurement, right? So an example of that would be, you know, spectrum analyzer used for analyzing and demodulating and providing metrics like EVM maybe didn't necessarily support those bandwidths. So we might need to pair that with a external digitizer to move to wider bandwidths. You know, maybe the analyzer supports a wideband IF, and, you know, we'd use an external digitizer like a scope or a dedicated digitizer of some sort. So the idea here is that we have a lot of flexible instruments and capability, but it's not necessarily all integrated into a single instrument. And so the problem is, you know, how do you optimize each one of those different instruments in your test setup to get the absolute best performance? And I've made hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of measurements with using these kinds of setups, right? And we made it work, and it was possible to do, and it was kind of groundbreaking at the time, but it was also very difficult to do. It was always the problem of the flexibility comes with the complexity. And, you know, you have instrument A that has a signal level at some area, and then you have the next instrument in the block maybe is expecting a signal level that's higher or lower. And so you got to balance all of those things in the system to try and get the best performance out of it. So those, I think, were some of the limitations in the early days, was really getting a more integrated test setups that were easy for engineers to use.
So I've seen you demonstrate 110 gigahertz of instantaneous bandwidth in a single acquisition. How is Keysight able to do that in a test setup?
Right. So that's very interesting. Yeah, that's with Keysight's UXR oscilloscope, which is a fantastic scope. And actually, there was a lot of different challenges we had to solve in making that work. And the first one, of course, that you pointed out was the, you know, getting to 110 gigahertz of bandwidth in a single acquisition. And a lot of people think, oh, you guys are doing some kind of interleaving with multiple, you know, smaller bandwidth analog to digital converters, but that's not the case. This is, you know, done with a single A to D converter. And, you know, Keysight has an entire organization we call Keysight Labs that basically just invents technology that we use. And they do a lot of work for us in, you know, providing new technology. So I probably almost every one of our instruments, there's some kind of a technology that Keysight has invented where we can't buy it off the shelf. And so if we can't buy it off the shelf, we'll invent it so that we can use it. And so that's a great example of that. And it is pretty technologically advanced, I would say. We have our own indium phosphide lab at our Keysight headquarters. We actually make and produce those A to D converters. So that was one challenge. Then you might think of other things that, you know, related to that, if you, you know, just consider it for a moment. So another one was, as I mentioned, the signal to noise ratio is of paramount importance. And we have a preamplifier in that scope that also works all the way to 110 gigahertz. So you can imagine that's a pretty tricky thing to do, to build a preamp that will work from zero to 110 gigahertz. Along with attenuators. So you can match the signal level that you're trying to work with the capabilities of the instrument. And then the last one I would point out is that scope has a sample rate of 256 gigasamples per second. And each sample is 10 bits, and you can have up to four channels in that scope, all of them running at that sample rate. And that's a terabit per second coming at you all the time. So how would you store that amount of data? You've got to do it very quickly, very efficiently. And so we had to solve that problem. Now that we've got that data, where do we put it? How do we put it somewhere? And then a couple of other interesting things related to that is, if you thought, okay, now I've got this data, I've got it stored somewhere, I figured out how to do that, now I need to do something with it. I want to process it and make some measurements. And, you know, if you tried to process that amount of data, you can do it, but it might be pretty slow if you're trying to process data at that rate. And for the RF engineer, we've done something pretty clever, and that is we do a digital down conversion. And so we throw away all the unnecessary samples, because usually the RF engineer doesn't need 110 gigahertz of bandwidth. You probably need, you know, maybe you need 5 or 10 gigahertz of bandwidth, maybe up at millimeter wave, or, you know, the higher millimeter wave, or the maybe at 28 or 39 gigahertz or something. So there you can limit the bandwidth of that measurement and decimate the samples before you get it to the software that's going to perform the actual measurements. And so we do all of that in hardware as well. And it makes the instrument response very snappy, behaves almost like a signal analyzer, what a traditional signal analyzer that you'd be used to using.
Yeah, it's very impressive. I've been to your facility and I saw how you make some of your own devices that are not available on the open market, whereas other manufacturers have to rely on, you know, outside foundries. So they're limited by what they can do. So can you walk me through some real cases that you've encountered recently with RF development engineers you've been working with?
Sure. And just to go back to that point, I'll make one little other comment. There's a very interesting blog on YouTube by SignalPath, I think Shreer is his name. Our R&D engineers sent him one of our very early UXR instruments and basically said, here's some of the key specs. We won't let you take apart this one, but we'll give you some of the keyboards. We'll give you the analog to digital conversion board. You can take that apart, say whatever you want. So he did an hour-long blog trying to do a teardown of the scope. And I thought that was pretty interesting. I went back later to the R&D engineers and I said, hey, so I watched the blog and, you know, I'm not an expert on all of the design inside, but what did you guys think of it? And they said, yeah, for the most part, he got most of it right. There were a few things that weren't exactly correct, but for the most part, he did a pretty good job kind of reverse engineering what we had done there. So I thought that was kind of interesting. So your next question then was some examples that I've encountered with R&D engineers working in 5G, I guess. A couple examples would be, I was recently involved in some with a customer working on, you know, basically doing a DPD where they were wanting to do DPD of a multi-carrier signal that was not contiguous. And, you know, they were using these new, again, amplifiers and, you know, trying to get those to be as efficient as possible. But they wanted the absolute best performance that they could get. And so this is, you know, another trend that we're seeing is, you know, the technology just gets better and better every day. And the R&D engineers continue to push the envelope. And that means Keysight also has to be, you know, two steps ahead of them if we're going to serve them well, right? And, you know, they were making some very hard to make measurements, but, you know, they were able to do it. And we were providing them with solutions to enable them to see the true performance of their device under test.
Yeah, I think that's the toughest job for a test and measurement company. You always have to be a couple years ahead of everybody else and be able to test things that are coming out. So how do you see the 5G challenges and measurement demands evolving over the coming years?
The technology is just going to continue to increase. People are going to continue to push the boundaries on things. And so we're going to see even more bandwidth. We're going to see higher frequencies. We're going to see new techniques, new modulation techniques. I was just talking with one of my coworkers the other day about this, and kind of in relation to 6G, some of the things that are happening in 6G. You know, can you imagine, you know, these kind of AI powered networks where perhaps we're not using a discrete, you know, kind of modulation coding scheme that we have with new radio or with 4G, where, okay, we're going to pick, you know, certain modulation and coding based on the propagation conditions, and we'll pick the one that's closest to the current conditions. But what if we were mapping the modulation and getting the absolute best efficiency possible? So maybe the modulation isn't something that we think of today. Maybe the, you know, the pattern isn't a, you know, the standard kind of square grid QAM kind of a thing, or, you know, the subcarriers are all modulated that way. Maybe it's something totally different that is the best absolute matched to the conditions. So that's an interesting, you know, maybe just a little bit of an interesting aside, but I think we're going to see higher frequencies, definitely wider bandwidths, and that's going to lead to new things with 6G, right? So the new radios, a lot of interworkings with existing radios, the AI-driven networks. There's going to be an important time element to that, right? So today we have, you know, we're sending packets across the networks on sort of a best case basis, but now you'd be able to exactly and accurately get a packet to its destination in the proper time. And then there's a whole new world of security that's going to have to go with that, right? We've seen, you know, you can see in the news, you know, things that are happening with people hacking into things. And I think that trend isn't going to go away. And so there's going to definitely be a lot of security being looked at with the new networks.
Yes, there's a lot that we can look forward to, Randy. Well, thank you very much for discussing the 5G millimeter wave market and challenges for us. We appreciate your insight and your practical knowledge, as you have a lot of experience in this area. Thanks everybody for listening today to Frequency Matters. Please check out our other episodes covering 5G topics. Thank you.